Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come this morning, actor Richard Dreyfuss on his forthcoming role as Bernie Madoff in a TV miniseries and his Dreyfuss Civics Initiative. Richard Dreyfuss wants you to sign the preamble to the U.S. Constitution, and he'll explain why. Also coming up in about 20 minutes, Opinion Roulette. It's my opinions and your opinions on the news of the week. And here's how this is going to work. I've written a short commentary on a news story of this week, and we're inviting you to call in with a short commentary of your own up to about 90 seconds. Now, you can just call in 15, 20 minutes with something at that time spontaneously, or you can give this some thought starting now and write it out if you have the time and the ambition. So start getting something ready if you want. And you'll also be able to react to a commentary that comes before yours. That'll be the roulette part in Commentary Roulette coming up later this hour here on The Brian Lehrer Show. So start thinking about what from the news of this week, Cincinnati, Congress, MTA funding, congestion pricing, Cecil the Lion, Donald Trump, your call, anything from the news of this week, your 90-second commentaries, think about what you want to comment on coming up later this hour. But right now, you don't need me to remind you of the very practical benefits of exercising, looking better, probably living longer, feeling better in the short term. But here with a different take, my next guest wants us to take a more philosophical look at exercise with a new book, How to Think About Exercise. Damon Young, Australian philosopher, honorary fellow in philosophy at the University of Melbourne, and author of the final installment in our School of Life self-help book series. This is the School of Life group in the UK that has put out a series of very interesting books, a number of which we've had the authors on, from How to Think About Sex to now How to Think About Exercise. So one more School of Life guest, Damon Young. Welcome to WNYC.
G'day, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And let me start by asking, what is exercise? And that might seem like a silly question, but as you know, I ask because your book discusses a lot of activities we typically think of as exercise, like running or football, but also many pages devoted to activities we might not normally think of as exercise, like solitude and meditation.
Yeah, that's right. What I was interested in is the act of a kind of mindful striving. So in some cases that might be sprinting up a hill or swimming laps or doing martial arts. But in other cases it might be something like just walking quietly and allowing reverie to arise. Or it might be meditating, when on the surface you're not actually doing anything, but really you're working quite hard to cultivate this state of no-mindedness. So what ties all these things together is it has to do with the way your body and mind are working together.
I want to jump to the end of your book, where you write that for us to do better than what you call the Chads of the world, we need to enroll more of our humanity into fitness. Who are the Chads?
The Chads are the stereotypical jocks. The Chads are the people who say, just feel the burn. The people who have shrugged off art and literature and philosophy. They've done away with thinking, and they see exercise purely as a kind of mechanical, physical duty. And I'm all for physical striving and working hard. The point of my book is people often give up on exercise when it is just like a mechanical tune-up. So they buy their gym membership, they encounter these Chads, the character from Burn After Reading, played so wonderfully by Brad Pitt. They encounter these Chads who tell them to do a certain number of reps and to feel the burn and get their personal best. But in 6 months, they give up Why? Because these are people who want more. They want to feel the sublime in swimming, or the reverie in walking, or the pride of sprinting. They don't just want a mechanical tune-up.
And as a philosopher's take on exercise, this isn't just do it, this is going to feel good, or do it, this is going to be good for you. You get into the concept of dualism for killing ambition, you say, and it's an idea that runs as a thread throughout the book. Can you explain what you mean by dualism?
Yeah, absolutely. It's partly what prompted me to write the book, because as a philosopher, I would tell people that I was going to go swing my kettlebells or do martial arts in the backyard with a friend or do hill sprints, and they would react with something like astonishment. And behind that was the idea that because I'm a philosopher, what I really am is just a mind. All I do is think. I sit all day and then do these loops in my head. And I realized that what was happening was that people often see the world quite sharply divided into body and mind, or soul and flesh, spirit and matter. And so they were thinking of exercise purely in physical terms, in mechanical terms. As I was saying, it's like when you go to the gym, it's like going to a car mechanic to get a tune-up. There's none of this intellectual activity and striving going on. So I wanted to take this idea of dualism, which I think is guiding a lot of people's ideas of exercise, and take it apart a little bit and say, well, actually, no, we're not minds that have bodies, like they're tools, like they're objects. We are bodies. One of the guiding quotes from my book is from the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, who says, body I am entirely and nothing else. And soul is just a word for something about the body. So when I talk about exercise, I'm not talking about the body as a thing that you have to manipulate. I'm talking about bodies as something we live through and revel in.
Listeners, you're hearing Australian philosopher Damon Young's take on exercise from his new book, How to Think About Exercise. Listeners, how do you think about exercise? Do you have a take that gets you all the way to a critique of Nietzschean dualism, or an embrace of Nietzsche in opposition to dualism? Do you think about that while you're on the treadmill? But how do you think about exercise? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I mentioned earlier that one of the obvious benefits of exercise is looking better, but you take that a step further in your book and explore why not just leanness but muscularity is so desired. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to put aside beauty, you know, because there is a common criticism of people who go to the gym that they are just pathological narcissists and all they do is sit gazing at their reflection. And I wanted to leave a place for beauty because we are creatures that respond to what is striking or stunning. And so what I talk about in human experience is the importance of unities, of rhythms, of cadences, of patterns. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. We get pleasure in seeing things through. We get pleasure in visual harmonies, these things that hang together. It's quite visceral. And what I'm suggesting is when you're looking in the mirror and looking at the play of muscles on your skin, at the new designs that are coming out, there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually quite a rich aesthetic experience. The problem is when you think it's anything more than superficial. It is literally on the surface of you, and you can enjoy that like you would a painting or a landscape. The problem is when you think the way you look entitles you to anything more. And that's when you get that horrible narcissism that's associated with some of the power sports or bodybuilding. But I don't think it has to be that way. I don't think there's anything wrong with taking pride in, you know, the play of light and shadow on our skin.
Laura on Long Island, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I'm a personal trainer with a background as a professional dancer in New York City, and I went to college for it. And I have to tell you, with my clients, one of the most important things that I get through to them, and this is what turns people from taking a few classes or a few training sessions to becoming lifelong devotees, is that the mind-body connection when you're using your body is paramount. Because if you're just, like you said, just doing this thing you have to do to look good or whatever, there's no reward in it. It just, it's for the moment, there's a little reward. But when you see that every time you come into the gym, you leave, you're less stressed, you come in exhausted, you feel better, you drop all the things, and you achieve something, and you accomplish something. I have judges, doctors, all sorts of people who work for me who end up feeling more powerful, stronger inside themselves because of this.
Laura, well put. Damon, any reaction?
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree more. One of the things I often talk to people in the classes I take is how to motivate yourself. And they'll often say, look, it's Saturday morning, it's 6 a.m., I do not want to get out from under the comforter and go for a run. And at that moment, what they're thinking of is, how can I lose weight? How can I have, washboard abdominals? That's not enough to get you out of bed. What gets me out of bed is the feeling I have as I'm running, the reverie I have, the void that I spin around as my footfalls are getting into that rhythm, and then how I feel after the run as the ideas come streaming into me and the impressions of the landscape I've seen. That's what keeps me running over the years, over the decades. And I think that's really important, getting people to change their focus from, as I was saying, the numbers, the number crunching, the personal best and so on, to what these exercises offer you as experiences, how they enrich your intellect, how they sharpen your feeling.
Erica in Brooklyn. Hi, Erica. Erica, you there? Let's try Lisa in Queens. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. This is very interesting. I really appreciate your having this conversation. I've been a personal trainer, a yoga instructor, and I'm training for the marathon right now. I've been exercising for almost 30 years every day. So I can personally attest to what Dr. Young is saying. But I'm curious his thoughts on yoga, because yoga basically is supposed to be about focusing on what you're doing with your body and not necessarily trying to get somewhere, just pushing yourself to your personal limit. And that's why they call it practicing, like you're practicing being calm in a challenging situation and sort of gets you into a meditative state. And I'm just curious what Dr. Young's feelings on specifically yoga are, please.
Yeah, look, I actually devote a whole chapter in How to Think About Exercise to yoga and meditation. I mean, it's extremely powerful. One of the things you were talking about, I discuss in the book, and that is when you do yoga, you're often taking an inventory of your body. You're taking stock of what your shoulder muscles have been doing all day, and why is your leg pulsing like that, and why do your lungs feel short of breath, and you're slowly, meditatively working your way through what the world does to your body, the way you hold yourself, the way you breathe, the way you flinch in certain positions. So that's one of the first gifts of yoga, is it brings your attention back in a really intimate way to how you're connected with the world, to what it's doing to you. But the second thing it does, and this is where the meditation comes in, is it actually cuts your ties to the world. They've looked at this with brain scans, but also studied it psychologically. At the later stages of meditation, you lose your sense of space and time. So you cease to be in a particular now and a particular here. This is this feeling of a sort of blissful oneness they talk about. And what that allows you to do is to have a break from all the attachments that normally keep you anxious. So the first part of yoga draws your attention to what the world is doing to you. The second part of yoga gives you a break from that and gives you some perspective. So it's an incredibly powerful set of techniques for taking stock of your life.
I think we have Erica back with us now. Erica in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
Yes, hello.
Hi, now I can hear you.
Hi, great. Well, I was just calling to say I'm a writer, and I find that exercise is really integral to the process of writing, especially something creative, because it's like you spend all this time working on it and being stuck, and then you can go away from it and run or do some work that really clears your brain so that when you come back to it, all of a sudden the ideas are coming quickly and the solutions are coming more quickly.
Erica, thank you. And Cece in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Cece.
Hello?
Hi, Cece. You're a dancer?
Yes, I am a dancer. And what I was explaining was that usually in life I've experienced the inverse of what your guest has experienced. Typically, people expect me to be a dumb dancer. The fact that I'm interested in any sort of intellectual exploits is foreign to them. Like, especially when I started dating at one point, like, I had Freakonomics on my dating profile, and, like, he didn't know what it was, but once he realized what it was, he was like, I'm shocked. Like, you were into that? I was like, are you pigeonholing me? So it's like, yeah, I understand exactly what he's saying. It goes both ways.
Damon Young?
Yeah, going back to what I think Erica was saying, one of the chapters in the book talks about Charles Darwin. And what some people don't realize is that Charles Darwin, the father of evolution by natural selection, walked every day, rain or shine. And he said that that was his hard thinking time. And what I talk about in the book is the state that walking cultivates called transient hyperfrontality. And basically, if you imagine your mind as one of those snow globes, you know, those little tourist balls that have the fake snow in them, what walking does is shake the snow globe and allow all different ideas and impressions and feelings to intermingle that were previously kept apart. So it's actually a wonderful state of mind for creativity. And often, as an author, I will get stuck at a certain point of the day. But instead of having another cup of coffee, I'll go for a walk. And sure enough, by the end of the walk, the problem is often solved. And it's not because I've sat there calculating and thinking intensely about it. It's actually, I haven't thought about it at all. But in the back of my mind, that snow globe has been shaking about, and suddenly I realize the solution. So walking, running, bicycling, can all encourage this state of mind, what I've called walker's reverie or runner's reverie. You may not want to get that on a push bike, though, because if you're in a reverie, you don't notice the truck.
Philosopher Damon Young. And that's, by the way, why I prefer as a runner to run on a track. And people say, you like to run on a track? That's so boring. And I say, I like to be able to turn off my brain. I'm thinking about things all day for work and my family, and I don't want to have to think about, do I cross this street, and what's the traffic going to be like over there? I like to go out on a track, completely turn off my brain, and go and let all those endorphins and everything else you were talking about flood in.
Exactly. So and there's nothing wrong with that. It's so important to put aside distractions. And so what I also talk about in the book is the importance of sometimes taking out the headphones and just allowing the environment to seep in, allow that reverie to arise. And you can have something to have reverie about without the interruptions of emails and SMS messages.
Damon Young, philosopher Damon Young, with his book, How to Think About Exercise. A tweet we're getting says, it's great when Western philosophy begins to remember it's attached to bodies. Show really hitting my heart today. And Adam in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Adam. Adam once. Adam twice.
He's gone running.
All right. I'm going to give you one last question from me, though, and then we're out of time. And it's about sports, which could be distinct from exercise. And you're right. Sports are make-believe pursuits that matter. They are simultaneously trivial and profoundly important. I think some sports fans struggle with this. Like, why do I care about the Jets? Why? So why do you think they're so important to us, trivial that matter?
Well, it's partly what Tolkien, the great fantasy author J.R.R. Tolkien, called an enchanted state. So normally we live in this world of ours. We are devoted to its rules. We understand what's expected of us, its duties and its laws. But when we enter a game or a sport, we invent a new world, a world perhaps with clearer rules, where we know exactly what we have to do and we know what we're supposed to be. We're wearing a particular uniform that says, here is your job. Things aren't quite as vague and dangerous, existentially speaking, when you're in a game. But perhaps more importantly, it's an act of freedom. We are thrown into this world and we have to make do. But with a sport, with a game, with tennis or football or baseball, you freely consent to building a world together with others and you play in it. And that's partly why cheating is so horrible. It's not just that people get something for nothing. It's that cheaters are destroyers of worlds because they break the rules that we've all consented to.
I love the way you put the experience of sports as building a world with others. The greatest baseball player ever in Japan, Sadaharu Oh, used to talk about becoming one with the pitcher who was throwing against him rather than just seeing him as an opponent. So,
oh, that's beautiful.
You should read his autobiography. I think you'd like it. But Damon Young, Australian philosopher, who has a book as part of the School of Life philosophy series called How to Think About Exercise. Thank you. This was great.
Thank you.